Blog Talk Radio.
Idea, and when we begin to think about it, if I was to ask you to describe the whole idea, what it is, I would expect we'd have quite a few different perspectives on that. And I think it's important that we articulate those perspectives, those visions, those perspectives, in order to not only better understand our own point, but to help us to appreciate the fullness and completeness of Freemasonry, and to probe a little bit about how these intriguing ideas have continued to percolate up from the underground into the light. Estimation has been around 900 years, but it could be longer than that or shorter than that. Anyway, I hope you'll sit back and find something reasonable. Hey, welcome to listeners from around the world. And just as I open the window on the program today, I need to talk a bit about the nature of our situation here in Upper Canada, and I suspect that it will resonate with many of you. It's not uncommon. It is within a large fraternity. At any given time, as you can perhaps agree, we will have enormous successes in whatever form that may be. And we will also have some projects and some lodges in decline, as if this is a very different kind of atmosphere that we are living in, with seasons all to itself. The permanence is that sense of continuity, that transition from one season to the next, to the next, to the next. We have, in the meantime, been impacted by new science, and we have tools today that are not widely used, which surprises me enormously. Even if you're entrenched in the metaphor, if you're taking literal translation of the metaphors within masonry, then even the craftsman would pick up the better tool when it was made available to him. And we have better tools made available to us, and yet we seem quite confused. The confusion, I think, is to do with some of those pressures and trends and motivations that we experience, whether we're aware of them or not. It's like saying a man has there's a subtext to life, there's a subconsciousness. Well, I mean, we may not even be able to understand that notion, but nevertheless, we still have a subconscious. Here, settled back to help us focus. We use some wonderful music, a form of music that, like Freemasonry, in my mind, should never exist, but does. Not only does it exist, but it's something quite beautiful when we are able to embrace it in its fullness. So if you're a bit perplexed at times about the good enough rule, well, here, let's try and focus and strive on what it could be, the dream that we try to make a reality. Here, this is from the Modern Jazz Quartet's lovely Gershwin medley. I think you'll like it. Thank you. Graceful way that the Gershwins let us enjoy experience their music. The commentary today caught me in a moment of coming to terms with the dynamic that's happening around here. We cling to memory of lodges, and we have great difficulty when its purpose has been fulfilled in an area, in a particular area of our landscape, letting go or developing a sense of closure. And it's partly because the sense of purpose is not clear or agreed upon for some. The name, or it's like history is erasing them and their time, their mates, so their work. If the lodge is in an area where the population has moved, and populations are moving in great swaths across between nations and within borders and boundaries, we can help that process along and do it with some dignity, but to resist it seems the act of just desperate people. Desperate men. Is that in any way a reflection of Freemasonry? And I have to say, no, it isn't. We're the group encouraged and inspired to get out ahead of these ideas, to explore them, to be able to look at an idea that contradicts our own, and examine it from different angles. You quickly realize the examination requires us to not feel threatened by them. When we feel threatened by ideas, we end up quite defensive. And the discussion, the debate, the brownness and fullness of the ideas withers. Little men do those types of things. Bigger men explore their minds. Explore the differences. What tugs at your sense of ethic and why? Well, when we begin to ask these types of questions, we begin to reason through. And inevitably, a man may feel that he likes a black and white existence, everything binary. But there comes a time in the course of nature, when things are neither right nor wrong. There can be two rights. And certainly, in the hands of fools, we know there can be two wrongs. There, sit back and fill up your glass. Get comfortable. This is the time of the season for love, agape. How can a man be other than his limited experiences without imagination? Are we suggesting that by being exposed to process without reasoning, one is capable of change? Isn't that a bit skewed? To think that insight can be commodified relies too much on wishful thinking. No one would suggest wishful thinking is unhealthy, Neither would anyone raise a child to believe accomplishing a meaningful life only requires wishing, proportion, and place. These are the environment we also teach our children. Petulance, like criticism and complaining, worsens inconvenience as if the world is deserving of another dose of thoughtlessness. Perhaps, instead of looking into a tracing board, we should begin with looking into a mirror. Then, asking ourselves the single most important question in life. Don't have anything? Is it time you did? Only one man knows that answer. We are so close to providing a fullness of Freemasonry, the experienced promise that changes a man, not compromise, not half measures, not good enough, the total suite, all in. If your ideal mentor is a man who can communicate with you, who can encourage without praising, who can realistically identify your strengths and with you acknowledges weaknesses as areas requiring training, then you have found a true Mason. The others are illusions. You'll know the difference when you meet him. Until then, absorb what is around that inspires and helps you focus. Ideas. Then notice the calmness within. And notice the difference between what you aspire to be and think and your true self. Don't tell a soul. That is your secret. And begin the experience by connecting existence to those intimate truths. Begin the experience of connecting existence to those intimate truths. If you seek the best in mankind, you will find it. If you stretch, a man's reach should exceed his grasp, or what's a heaven for? You grow. little Lenny Brew. The great beauty of poetry is that it makes everything, every place, interesting. John Keats is alleged to say that, said that to his brother, George, in 1819. Seems fitting that a Mason would be receptive to that type of statement. It poses a frame of mind in front of us. Character development is the platform of Freemasonry. I think it's an outcome. It's an outcome of exploration. If you're wondering why study, why reason through, as if you need to have as if that's a question at all, because if you're thinking that if you go through your day without any sense of understanding anything around you, well, we're not having this conversation, really. But if you're not sure the next steps, that's a good place for a young, fresh outlook in Masonry. Masonry is a daunting process. I see a confident men coming forward to the craft. Not at all experienced, but confident. And using that, the bravado that goes with the confidence. Even if that's all you do when you put on your suit in the morning until the end of your day, and you catch yourself cutting your lawn in a shirt and tie, you still have an aspect of vulnerability. You may try to crush it under your boot heel, but it's there. And there will be that time when the serious questions are posed, whether you're alert enough to anticipate them or not. The notion is that by contemplating these questions before that moment, you begin to have a sense of the kind of answer that would comfort us when we most need it. It's rightful that we live in a world that we recognize as a place where blaming other people for our shortcomings is commonplace. Those are the actions of a common man, in a way. Meager. There comes a time when a Mason realizes his responsibility for everything. The positives and the negatives fade, and you begin to look for a more complete understanding of moving forward. I do enjoy a notion that comes to us from Confucius. What was that, about 6th century BC? Yeah. Go through your day, I paraphrase here, of course, go through your day without causing inconvenience for any living soul. I love the idea, and it fits hand in glove with the processing of the Masonic focus of our philosophy. Fits so very, very well. Here, the great beauty of poetry, Keats helps us to, if he's saying, it makes everything, every place more interesting. For those who are so wrapped up in the impulsivity of this hurricane of information that we find ourselves in today, here's a little notion. Let me lean in and whisper it to you. Keep your eye on the ball. Everything, the information may be flowing around you at so rapid that it's hard to keep up with it. But that doesn't necessarily mean it captured or controls your thinking until you allow it to do that. It's not so much the simple things, it's the important things that we need to recall. And that takes a bit of time. Freemasonry is not going to be a good place for the impulsive and the rash. It's just a place where we learn contemplation has benefits. Although, you know, just like Thoreau, the lake became more popular and well-known than his views, his ethics. But similarly, masonry has taken on a life of its own. Interesting that something in the abstraction could be given those qualities. But see, if you explore, if you're at that point where you can intellectually embrace the notion that there could be something more interesting than a superficial glance, and that perhaps Keats was onto something, which I tend to think he was, then sit back and see for yourself. This isn't an imposition. This is where you experience for yourself. Do you get it? Do you get that idea? Keats was born in 1795, and he published 3 books of poetry in his lifetime. But he was dismissed as a middle-class interloper by most critics. He had no advantages of birth or wealth or education. He lost his parents in childhood. He watched one brother die of tuberculosis and the other emigrate to America. Poverty kept him from marrying the woman he loved. He just couldn't afford to be married. And he achieved lasting fame only after his early death in 1821. What was he? 26 years old? Yet the grief and hardship never destroyed his passionate commitment to poetry. And I love this analysis. Reading Keats is a luxury, a rare chance to experience the English language as a work of art. Whether you are new to his work or a dedicated admirer, enjoy visiting. This is Ode on a Grecian Urn. It's a poem that focuses on art and beauty, truth and time, as one of Keats' 5 odes, considered to be some of the best examples of romantic poetry. The poem is an example of ekphrasis, a Greek word meaning to describe a work of visual art in words. Set yourself the task. It's not as easy as you think. You look at something and then describe it in words. It's different. What makes an ode to a Grecian urn particularly important is its exploration of the idea that beautiful art transcends time and reality, that beauty is truth. Kind of an interesting concept for a Freemason to digest, isn't it? This ode also raises the perplexing question of art and its effect on the human psyche. Humans can be deceived because art, although enduring, could be a false ideal, like the notion of eternity. In the end, the narrative, the The speaker's approach to the urn is turned on its head as the urn voices its wisdom to the speaker and the reader and humanity. Beauty is truth. Truth is beauty. But Keats believed that spontaneous sensations of the heart held the truth as opposed to the dry, reasoning mind. In a letter to a friend, Benjamin Bailey, on the 22nd of November in 1817, he wrote, "What the imagination seizes as beauty must be truth, whether it existed before or not. For I have the same idea of all our passions as of love. They are all in our sublime, creative, and essential beauty." Think about it. He seems to be pointing out Freemasonry. If Freemasonry is knowledge plus imagination, K plus I. If we only accumulated all of the knowledge, that would not be Freemasonry. Freemasonry requires that catalyst, imagination. Imagination, the idea of the Reformation or Counter-Reformation, the Age of Enlightenment. This wasn't a concept that somebody articulated. These were processes that were going on in different areas of the world. And we benefited from them in hindsight. We were able to see the some boundaries to some edges to the idea and begin to see that this was almost a movement, or what we could refer to today as movements, collective thought. But to happen required, in the first instance, required imagination by those thinkers. Anything, think of anything that's around us, it requires an imagination. Sometimes we stumble over those discoveries quite by accident. But it's the imaginative that gave form. Who would have thought that those groups of men leaning in on conversation, intimate conversation, thoughtful conversation, intelligent conversation, whether tradesmen or scholars, the scholars would always pass on their knowledge to the tradesmen, and the tradesmen were always receptive because it gave them a leg up, one that they wouldn't otherwise have, from a source that they could trust. As we hear, John Keats couldn't afford to be married. He didn't have a leg up. A leg up is there if you're intelligent enough to use it, or ball your little hands into fists and close your eyes and stamp your feet and be petulant. Here, Ode to a Grecian Urn. I'll only read a little bit. You'll get just a taste of it. This is like Freemasonry, an acquired taste. "Thou still unravished bride of quietness, thou foster child of silence and slow time, Sylvan historian, who canst thus express a flowery tale more sweetly than our rhyme? What leaf-fringed legend haunts thy shape, of deities or mortals or of both, Entempt or the dales of Arcady? What men or gods are these? What maidens lost, what mad pursuit? What struggle to escape? What pipes and timbrels? What wild ecstasy? Heard melodies are sweet, but those unheard are sweeter. Therefore, ye soft pipes, play on, not in the sensual ear, but more earnest. Pipe to the spirit deities of no tone, fair youth beneath the trees, thou canst not leave thy song, nor ever can those trees be bare. Bold lover, never, never canst thou kiss. Though winning near the goal, yet do not grieve, she cannot fade. Thou hast not thy bliss, forever wilt thou love, and she be fair." O-attic shape, fair attitude. With braid of marble men and maidens overwrought with forest branches and the trodden weed, thou silent form dost tease us out of thought, as doth eternity. Cold pastoral, when old age shall this generation waste, thou shalt remain in the midst of another woe, then ours, a friend to man to whom thou sayest beauty is truth, truth, beauty. And that is all ye need on earth and all ye need to know. Ha! Webster playing for us from 1954. Beautiful. We're subject to the effects of impulsiveness. It's a barrier. We refer to it often as procrastination, distraction. We wake up with a goal in mind or task that we need to complete for the day, and very quickly, two or three other more immediate, short-term tasks take our attention away. And then compound that with the materialism. We live in a world of materialism, where the world, and often even in our own lodges, we cross that line and are performing an upsell constantly. If you're near any form of communication, somebody will be trying to pitch something to you or me, even if it's to create that sense that we need something that's obviously unnecessary. Create that need and then sell it. It's that the jungle that we're living in now, the garden that we're living in now, is a marketplace, the agora. Caveat emptor, buyer beware. Well, it's a blur. Ideas that are sold to us or presented to us in 15-second blocks. Where do we get to sit back and think about the idea before we're on to the next one and the next one and the next one? And then at the end of that day, of course, we're going to feel emotionally and intellectually drained, because we have the other important things to tend to, the maintenance of relationships and the maintenance of ourselves and our peace of mind. Well, you can see today that it's easier in a way. I take that back. It's not easier today than it was before. People can be persuaded if they're kept away from that moment of contemplation. Keep people off balance and they're easier to control. People that interview with the express use of authority often are taught how to exploit, how to keep people off balance by playing with anxiety. Not exactly something to be proud of, playing with the weakness of humanity. But it undermines us if we aren't able to, at some point, maintain our resolve, be reminded. Well, Freemasonry can do that for us. The impulsivity we keep in mind, the threat, and keep our eye on the goal. Now, particularly here, we need to pull together all of those specialized programs, all the specialized ideas and consultants that we have. We have a great deal of talent. We're pulling it together into the idea, the whole, the purpose. Everything that we do needs to, at some point, be looked at through those larger lenses. And if you, like me, think that character development is the essential purpose, then we can simply ask ourselves that if what we're doing and what we're saying has an aspect of character development. Sometimes I have to wonder, what is it about these tasks that inspire? And in fact, it's pretty bleak, and some of them are just tedious and boring as old, my goodness. But when you have a cast sitting on the benches with a growing, appending, unlimited sense of umbrage, there's no conversation. There's no debate. It's just hands flung in the air, screaming away. Sit back. You're not schoolboys. Put yourself in the mind of the person across from you, see the world through the eyes of another person, Freemasonry. It's what we call insight, isn't it? Isn't it? I think so. Jerry Mulligan, in the wee hours. Sweet music. Quite a group. Sometimes you think, you know, we have that potential, don't we? Absolutely. Here. Lean in just a little bit. We're continuing our education in symbolism. Reasons. What do these symbols reveal? And why have they endured? Why have men, Masons, for centuries, used these symbols. And if you are an antiquarian, if you open your books, you start to study, you'll learn that not all symbols have endured. They've morphed, they've changed. You know, like when we, do you think that we're a process of spontaneous birth? The square and compasses and everything around us have just popped up? No, we evolved. There was a time when the square and the compasses were put together as a symbol. Like beehives, remember? And where I am, we had one group go through, one merchant go through and sell us all a form of tracing boards. And for many, the thinking is that is the way it is. There is nothing else. Well, imagine reducing our history to something like that. But that's the experience. If you're limited to your experience, you've not looked beyond, then that's the reality. There is that tracing board and everything else is alien. In fact, we are variations on the theme, many, many variations on the theme. And for good reason. It's what's meaningful for those fellows. Some will always be chomping at the bit to explore meaning. Not everybody does. Not everybody can. But we, when we are able, we unpack the information and symbols and then explore it for ourselves. First, we explore the analysis, which is given to us from somebody else thinking about it. And then we apply that analysis to our own thinking and our own reasoning. And if we continue to work with our symbols with the notion that my thought, my worldview is superior and more correct than any other, that reflects on the smallness of our minds, of our personality, of our character. You really think that is valid? You think that's the purpose of life? That because we say it in a pedantic way, that it's somehow grander? No. The bigger man doesn't act that way. He doesn't sound that way. And you and I know that. Here, let's unpack one of this work. We're getting into the winter of this book by Colin Dyer, just staggeringly useful. He's talking about here, helping us to understand that we're matured. We've matured. You figure out who that character is. He's talking here about the genuflection. It was used in the infancy of the world as an act of devout homage to God. For it is in reality an expression of humility and reverence for a created mortal in the great author of his existence. Pliny says that in the knees of a man there is reposed a certain religious reverence, observed even in all the nations of the world. For humble supplicants creep and crouch to the knees of their superiors. Their knees they touch. To their knees they reach forth their hands. Their knees they worship and adore as religiously as the very altars of the gods. In the system of Christianity, this custom is universally prevalent in obedience to the repeated injunctions of Christ and his apostles. Here it is described as a proper and approved act of devotion, and one of the fathers of the church has conferred a still higher character upon it. He says, where we bow the knee, it represents our fall in Adam. And when we rise, having received the benefit of prayer addressed to the throne of grace, it is a type of our restoration in Christ by the grace of God. through whom we are able to lift up our hearts to heaven. The candidate for masonry is directed to bend his knee with a similar reference. He is in a state of intellectual darkness as far as regards the science into which he is about to receive initiation. His mind, unenlightened with the bright rays of Masonic knowledge, bends before the divine illuminator in the humble hope that his understanding may be opened and his mental faculties improved by the process of initiation, commenced with a devout supplication to and a firm reliance on that great being whose favor alone can convey protection and assistance in every difficulty and danger he may be called on to sustain as a trial of his patience, fortitude, and zeal. Here. That's something to sit back and sip whatever you're sipping and think about it just a little, but only do it for yourself. Do it for your own sake. If it doesn't resonate, move on. Move on. Some can unpack the message and the information. Some can't. Sometimes it is a matter of the timing. Maybe you need to circle back and reflect on this when you're on your own. Those quiet moments. Here, I'm going to leave you with something here. Something that I've been toying with. As we read history and we read poetry, I wanted to share with you some of the earliest poetry that I could find, ancient poems, just to put perspective on symbols, meaning. There's a clarity and a simplicity. Maybe it's not as ponderous for some as Shakespeare, but in the fewer words, the Greeks are packing in enormous packages of information. This is from Meleager. It's a poem from ancient Greece, found in a collection of Greek called the Greek Anthology. Meleager of Gadara, who was Syrian by birth, but Greek by education. And his collection called the Garland, about 90 BC, established the style and spirit of the earliest anthologies of poems. Here, just a sample. See if I found one that declares the thinking. It's not so much simple, it's just so clear. It's like a scalpel. Help, he is gone, that wild boy. Love has escaped. Just now, as day was breaking, he flew from his bed and was gone. Description? Sweetly tearful, talks forever, swift, irreverent, slyly laughing, wings on his back and carries a quiver. His last name, I don't know, for his mother and father, whoever they are in earth or heaven, won't admit it. Everyone hates him, you see. Take care, take care. Or even now, he'll be weaving new snares for your heart. But hush, look there, turn slowly. You don't deceive me, boy. Drawing your bow so softly when you hide in Xenophiles' eyes. See? Works. I hope you have an enjoyable and rewarding a week until we are able to sit down again. And if you fellas don't mind, I want to do a shout out to the listeners from Portugal and from the Netherlands and Belgium and Japan. Okay. Thank you for tuning in from wherever you are. Commit those acts of random Masonic kindness. What a diabolical craft, isn't it? we're charged with performing acts with the express vehicle of humility. Nobody is to know. Can you imagine? Don't you want a banner, a sign, some neon lights that point out, look what I've done, look what I've done. I'm better, I can compete. And yet you've assigned yourself to explore the possibilities. What that does, not for for the world around, but for yourself. Are you taking yourself that important yet? No? See you soon. Thanks for tuning in. Commit those acts of random Masonic kindness. It's a little less mechanical. Thank you.